They're like Facebook.
Hey, dude, it'd be a great podcast guest, dude. Talk to your old friend, dude. Bring him in here. You want to go down nostalgia lane?
Welcome to the DLG podcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Emilio.
And let's get into it.
Yeah, bud.
Boom. Right let's into it. Yeah. So we were talking a little earlier, and I feel like we lost the mojo, but I had a pretty good week this week. It was not calm, but closer to calm than what I've had the last few prior weeks. So yeah. I actually got a lot done.
Kind of the same for me. It was a little slower, but also at the same time, my babysitter quit on us. So I had to take a day off of work, take care of the baby, and we're kind of like scrambling to repair that. So that's why I haven't been able to do much this week. I'm just babysitting all the time.
The babysitter quit?
Yeah. She went on to greener pastures. Even though we're paying her more than her job, the job comes with benefits. You can't really.
Oh, yeah. You can't beat that.
Yeah.
Can't beat those bennies.
Yep.
All right. So I got to actually play quite a few games this week, but I'm really diving deep into the retro thing, into the emulator zone, man. Like I'm getting deep into it, man. I'm beyond the looking glass here. I finished The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, so you don't have to hear me talk about that anymore.
And the last word on that is?
It's great. I mean, I didn't think I was going to beat it this week because last week I had left off after level 4 in the Dark World. And the worst levels in the game are 5 and 6. The Ice Palace and like the, fungus or marsh palace. They're a real pain in the ass. And they took me quite a while. But after I got over that hump, like the last few levels, super easy.
Like poor level design or just hard for the sake of being hard?
No, just difficult. Actually, well designed. Oh, okay. I mean, very challenging. But yeah, man, I really enjoyed that Link to the Past.
And what's your emulator of choice?
I'm using SNES 9X, which is what I've used forever. And a lot of people claim like, oh, that's the best. But I also got into RetroArch because here's the thing. Like I was explaining last week, I had some slowdown and I ran all sorts of tests, showed the frame rate. Nope. Getting 60 frames. Where could that be coming from? And then I discovered RetroArch, which is on Steam, but it's, I don't know. RetroArch on Steam is not out yet, but it's an emulator and it's one that you can emulate any system, any game, by loading specific cores that you need. And it's got a really, really clunky UI. Like RetroArch is probably one of the clunkiest ones I've used before.
Okay.
But the upside to it is it has a lot of things you can do with it. It's got a lot of versatility. First, you can load any core that you want. So you want an SNES emulator, you pick, do you want to use SNES Mercury, SNES 9X, the 2005, 10, or current edition, all these different things. And each of them have like benefits and drawbacks. It also gives you the ability to basically overclock your emulator so you can run it faster than usual, which is really important for Super Nintendo games like Star Fox or Stunt Racer FX that, they started using a lot of 3D in them.
Yeah.
So it helps out with the frame rate on those games. It's also
pretty sweet.
Yeah, it is nice. It's just that UI is so hard to get over. One really cool thing I found with RetroArch though is that you can also reduce input lag by, you can set a setting called like run ahead frames and it lets you, it reduces the input lag and you can like pinpoint precise, make it accurate by pausing the game and then like holding down the jump button and then going one frame forward each time and see exactly how many frames it takes for your character to jump. So then you can see how many frames behind you are, and then you can adjust that in the settings. Damn. There's YouTube videos on it, but basically it reduces input lag and it really gives you that snappy feeling.
And probably better than the original, right?
Yeah, maybe. Like, maybe even better. Like, basically you can, with that and overclocking. I think that's sniper sound effects.
Oh, okay.
But basically, yeah, you can get a Super Nintendo running better on a computer than it ever did, like in its actual console form. So
I would hope that we have the technology.
You think so?
But the problem is there's not a lot of money in emulator making.
Like, no, this is all passion projects.
It's all passion projects. So that's why, it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
If there was some money behind it. If Nintendo just streamed their library. It's not like anybody's buying these old games. If they just streamed it on something like a Stadia, dude, fucking, you'd make $5 a month from everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure they could find a way to make money off of that. There's got to be a way. But I don't know. I mean, a lot of people, with a lot of these retro games, these Super Nintendo games, like I load them up, I play them, and I'm just like, huh, okay, that was cool, but I'm not gonna seriously sit here and play through this game. Obviously, that wasn't the case with A Link to the Past. I played that through T to B, dude, top to bottom, start to finish, and enjoyed every minute of it. But yeah, not every Super Nintendo game is like that.
My new game says that like CRT is the way to go, and maybe 4K TVs have RetroArch, which is a crazy shader that emulates a CRT. Do you think the modern screens have something to do with it? With some of the...
he says it emulates a CRT.
Yeah. But he said he also played Carry on the CRT, and it was amazing.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's so many... That's what's cool about RetroArch. There's so many settings in there for you to tinker with and get things exactly right. And I've just been kind of diving into that a little bit and trying to get the best possible experience. But for most people... Yeah, I'd recommend SNES 9X. I mean, you can get it on like an Android phone or possibly an iPhone. I don't know.
Have you tried it on the phone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have played SNES.
How are the controls?
They do the on-screen control thing, right, which is super annoying because then you're covering up your like the actual game.
Yeah.
That's actually why I bought the 8-bit-do SNES controller, like the Bluetooth controller. Yeah. But there's like severe lag when you use Bluetooth. So I never really liked it. But the controller, if I plug it in with USB, works great with my computer.
So the emulation life, it has its hiccups. You got to like work through some stuff if you want
to. Yeah. I mean, it's always been like that, but it really depends on what you're emulating too. So, I mean, dude, I'm going to talk so much about emulation this episode. I don't even know where to go to. I guess I'll just get this out of the way. So I finished Legend of Zelda, really liked that. The next Super Nintendo game, well, I should probably go through this chronologically. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to watch speedruns of old games just to get it out of my system. Like, why go back and play the original Nintendo Legend of Zelda when I can just watch someone speedrun it in 27 minutes and just feel like satisfy all the nostalgia, basically. And that's what I did, man. I watched all these old speed runs. The Legend of Zelda, the Nintendo one's great, by the way.
But 27 then minutes, is that the world record?
Yeah, around 27 minutes. But I came across Super Metroid, and I saw someone set the record at around like 40 and a half minutes. Incredible run. And they always do that at Games Done Quick. They always do like the four-player versus speed run, and it's always a lot of fun. Save the animals, kill the animals, you know, that whole meme they do. But after watching the speedrun, I was like, man, I kind of got to play that game again. Just the sounds were like triggering memories in my head. I got this game for my birthday back in the day. When did it come out? 94? Yeah, 94. And I played this game so much, and it was one of my favorite experiences on Super Nintendo. So I had to go back and start playing that.
Did you ever finish it when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, absolutely. Yeah. I beat the game. And it's not too difficult of a game to beat. Although going back to it now, I am having such a hard time playing this game. The controls feel so weird to me. Like,
it's
the
all
shoot
we had,
button,
dude. We didn't know any better at the time.
Well, plus I watched a guy speedrun it in 40 minutes, and he's just like, dude, it is unbelievable. This is the speedrun right here that I was watching, actually. Right. You can see his hands in the top right screen. He's like expressionless in the top left for the entire thing. And he makes it look so easy. Like, I'm struggling to like jump off and latch onto the wall and then jump off. You know how you can do that like side jump?
Right.
He's like hitting enemies so they fling you across the screen faster. He's like zapping doors and then running through them without having to wait for them. Just like all these things, like jumping, shooting. And it was so hard for me to do that on the Super Nintendo controller because the buttons feel so far away. Like, it's just, and the default settings for the game is just kind of like, I don't know, man. I think I kind of set myself up for failure here because I watched him do this and I'm like, no problem. I got
no
this.
No problem.
Yeah. And I'm just,
meanwhile, he hasn't stopped playing since when you were a kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that guy was incredible. He speed runs a lot apparently. And, who is this guy? What's his name? Let me scroll down here. Zosti, like Toasty, but with a Z. Hmm. Yeah. Incredible stuff. So yeah, in that case, the watching speedruns idea kind of backfired on me, and then it got me hooked on yet another SNES classic. I don't know how far. I'm already pretty far, dude. I'm already in Norfair here, so I'm like,
are you having a good time?
I am enjoying it, man. I thought this was such a creepy game. I watched the original Metroid speedrun too, and that too was just so. It was like Alien. It was so creepy, and the sound effects were like boop, 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 boop. Just so subtle and so calm and so like bizarre and like foreign. It was just for a Nintendo game or even a Super Nintendo game. Like, dude, that's incredible that like they made this back then. Within that time span too, I think Metroid for the Nintendo came out in like 91. Super Metroid comes out 3 years later in 94.
It's like they were technically held back, right? But doesn't mean that their imagination wasn't running wild. So, you know, they did what they could with what they had and, you know, things like that, like the sound effects. That's what made it a classic. It wasn't the graphics. Well, maybe at the time it was pretty good.
Yeah. Having more to work with, a bigger console, just opened up so many doors for them. So yeah, man, I got into that.
Like a full 10
things have been slow at work, so I pulled out my old Open Emu, which is a Mac emulator. It's an all-in-one where you can just like throw whatever you want in there, and it's so great. It's so clean because you put the games in there, and you save states in emulators. You know how you can like pretty much save anywhere at any point in the game, and you can load it with the press of a button.
It's like a virtual computer inside of your computer, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But it does that all within the app. You don't have to have all these messy files around everywhere. Like, you don't even see it, man. It's just so clean how it operates. But with that, I've been playing an old Nintendo classic, Swords and Serpents.
I don't remember that game. Can you
show it
to
me? Swords and Serpents, I've talked about a few times on the podcast before. It is a grid-based RPG game. And first of all, okay, here's the story. I bought this when I was a kid at a swap meet. And I saw, look at that cover art, dude. Seriously, look at that
looks
cover
awesome,
art.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I remember that.
Yeah.
It's pretty iconic, dude. I think I remember that specific thing.
That is like, you know, 70s, 80s sci-fi, like or not sci-fi, but fantasy. Like.
Oh, dude. You know what came up last night was Scroll? Do you remember Scroll?
No.
So I was trying to explain it to Sam, mansplaining, because it came up, right? So Scroll is like Conan, but the Scroll was like a dude. I mean, a weapon. It was basically like a boomerang, like a giant ninja star, and you could throw it and it would kill everybody.
Movie?
It's a movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
Scroll
like,
or
I think it was Scroll, wasn't it? Was it Crawl? You might be right.
You might be talking about Crawl.
Yeah. With the three blades that came out?
Yeah, yeah, the three blades,
oh,
and they go
see,
on that.
We were calling it Scroll last night. We couldn't. Anyway.
Okay.
Sam's like, what the fuck? Why would anybody make this? And I was like, I think my. So Conan came out. Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, there was a huge push in
huge success,
like early 80s, like maybe late 70s, early 80s, where they were really trying to corner the fantasy market like Conan. Conan was big. But George R. Martin talks about this a lot too, about how like all his books started getting optioned right around then. Like there are a few like fantasy hits, and all of a sudden the late 70s, all his shit gets bought up because everyone's trying to make that next big, you know, movie that everyone gets into.
And the cover of all these movies and these games is that exactly high fantasy.
Yeah, is that Swords and Serpents cover.
Dude holding a sword, fucking girl, like.
Yeah, and like a loincloth.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a girl in like the like tiny bikini holding a sword. You got an elf or a thief in there. Yeah. Yeah, dude. So, I mean, I saw that at the swap meet. I'm like, dude, this looks incredible. $5. Boom. Sold. And then I find out it's this really weird, clunky, slow paced, grid based RPG. And I was so confused by this game.
You were too young for that.
I was way too young for that, but I still stuck with it. I was just like, I wasn't going to let this game get the better of me. And I was absolutely terrible at it. I never made it out of the first level. So it's kind of weird now to go back and play Swords and Serpents and just be like, oh, this is all the game that I was missing. This is how you play it. Like, and it's so easy now.
Not easy. It's easy to understand now.
Yeah. But it is, dude, it is hard. Even for a guy who likes retro games, this is tough. Like, to heal yourself, you got to press a button, you got to scroll down to your mage, select him, then you got to go to another menu, select a spell, then scroll down and select the person you want to heal. You got to do that, like, for all your characters.
Why are you doing this to yourself?
I don't know. I love grid-based RPGs, man. And I've always had it out for this game because it kind of kicked my ass when I was a kid. So, you know, but there's
Wizardry was mine. Like
a Wizardry. Yeah.
If I think back to the only game like on NES that mm-hmm. was like this, it was Wizardry. But there was a lot more like riddles and puzzles mm-hmm. and a lot more graphics in this.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe to like 12-year-old me or whatever I was always like, these are like arbitrary answers. Like, I don't think that this, maybe I just didn't understand the riddle. Yeah. I think that's what it was. I didn't get the riddles. But that's always one that like, fuck. Nah, I wouldn't go back. Fuck that.
No, dude, I tried to go back and play Wizardry 6, like 6, yeah. 7, and 8. You can buy in a bundle for super cheap on Steam. And there was no way, man. That just too old. Although, I don't know, on a Nintendo, like things are a little more streamlined typically on a console because they have to like, they can't make it too crazy and out there.
Yeah.
You know, they got to make it a little more accessible, I feel. So, yeah, man. So that's another emulator or another ROM I've been playing. And
shoehorn my only game that I played this week. Among Us, it's real big right now on the interwebs. Yeah. It's funny. I saw a meme where like the Among Us character, which is a really cute, really cool art. Like mm-hmm. they're just all little cute little spacemen. But like he just came out and killed the guy from Fall Guys. Like just shot him in the head
because
it's totally just changing. It totally took the place of Fall Guys, you know, or mm-hmm. at least it feels that way. But it's nowhere near the same kind of game. This is a game about lying to each other, and it is very interesting. So, there's a lot of games out there like that, especially like party games that you play socially. You know, mm-hmm. like the whodunit kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we played something similar. Were you there, Bobby, for Project Winter?
No, I remember when everyone was playing that though.
Yeah, so Project Winter is very similar to this, but it takes, I feel like it's stretched, the timeline is stretched out too long. These games are like under 10 minutes and everything happens within that time and it feels, well, it all depends. So quickly, 10 people are on a space station and the shit's going bad. And you got to fix the shit. Everybody has their own missions. You got to run out and you have to like, I don't know, rewire the generator and you need to, throw out the trash that's clogged in the whatever. And you have to do this or that or that. And it's just your little cute little character running up to some sort of kiosk. And then you lose all sight of your character and you're looking at a little mini game, a little tiny, shitty looking game, you know, put the leaves in the hole, put the wires together. Red wire goes with red wire. It's just like a little tiny mini game that takes 5 to 10 seconds. Right. But in that time, you can get backstabbed by two. If you're playing a 10 player game, two people are, interlopers or, I forget what, that's not the name, but, you know, people that are out to kill everybody, saboteurs, basically. And you can get backstabbed. You can get backstabbed anywhere because you can't defend yourself at all. If they want to kill you, they just kill you anywhere. But after people are killed, other people can report a dead body. And then about every 2 minutes, you have a group meeting. And, you know, this doesn't work over Discord. Everybody has to be super quiet. You can't say anything. You can't even react to being killed. You can't be like, oh, because like it gives away too much information. So you have to like make sure nobody's talking. Mm-hmm. And then you have the meeting and then all of a sudden accusations are flying. Defenses are flying all through. It's like, I don't know. How could I possibly have killed you, dude? I was down here with this guy. And then that guy might corroborate that story or he might not. Yeah. Like I didn't see you. And then, a lot of times the two bad people will collaborate with each other because they know who they are and be like, no, he was totally like working on the space station. And so the first time I played, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I was just walking around, then I was dead. And I was like, I don't know. I can't really say anything. I wasn't paying attention to who or what. I was just trying to get the mechanics down, right? Second game, suddenly now I'm a murderer. And I did terrible. I killed one person. Somebody's like, what were you doing in the northeastern portion? I was like, yeah, you got me. Like, I was just
Dude, you gave up pretty quick.
I was terrible. I was terrible, dude. And then the third game, I was an assassin again. And then I went from not talking at all to talking a ton. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, what if this guy and this guy and this guy? And everybody's like, dude, you're being way too, like, too analytical. You're obviously, and they kicked me out of the shoot. Wow. So the way that the murderers win is if the fucking, the spaceship destroys or blows up, or they kill everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And then the good people, they have to get all their tasks done. After you die, you can still, as a ghost,
so you play in tasks. Rounds, like you go through a round, then people discuss and they try to finger the sabotage or saboteurs.
Yeah, the saboteurs. About every 2 minutes, I think that happens.
Okay.
Or whenever a body is reported. What's interesting is the saboteurs can also report dead bodies. So, which is interesting. And they can use the ventilation system to get around really quick. So if you see somebody jump into a vent, you know right away it's them.
Can you play this with randos, or is this like an only, like an invite only?
I'm not sure, but the servers are suffering from its popularity. That's for sure. We had a really hard time getting 10 people into a game. Harder than it should have been, even with a room code, which shouldn't be a problem, but yeah, we were having problems.
So it's like there's too many people playing the game, it's overloaded.
It seems like, I mean, that's what I would attest their problems to be, but I don't know, maybe it's just bad code or bad net code. But
it doesn't look like too hard of a game to run.
No, not at all. Yeah, I think it's just too many people playing their game.
Yeah, I don't know, I'd be terrible at this game.
Yeah, dude, I'm not a very good liar. I started to get the gist of it. But it is fun being on the defensive side. Well, it is fun either way, because you have like a 20% chance that you're going to be the saboteur, and that's just a nice break from doing the other one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like, what are you supposed to do? Like when I was on the good side, I was just following people around to make sure they weren't fucking around. But guess what? My tasks aren't getting done, and we have a limited time. If the tests don't get done, the ship explodes and the saboteurs win. So you can't just be watchdogging. Also, I got called out for watchdogging because they're like, dude, this guy was just wallowing me the whole time and it looked like he was trying to kill me. And I was like, no, dude, I was just keeping an eye on you because I don't trust you. And then I got kicked into the fucking airspace or whatever, out of the air hole. Right. What is that called? Anyway. Yeah.
Well, there's 250,000 people playing this game right now. So, it looks like it's pretty popular. And as we just found out today, you can play this on your phone for free, totally free on mobile and cross-platform. So you can play with people who are playing, who have bought this on Steam for $5.
That's probably why it's, I mean, how many of those people are on their phone right now? It's interesting.
Well, that only counts people on Steam.
Oh, okay. So how many more people are we playing?
There's even more people on mobile. Yeah. Probably. I mean, you could go to the mobile store for like iPhone or Android, Google Play Store, and you could see how many how many reviews it has. Sometimes that gives you a bit of an idea, but I imagine it's quite a bit.
Ah, it's the imposter. That's what they call them in this game.
The imposter.
But it's fun. Yeah, it's fun either way. Those little sessions are really interesting, man. Like Daniel's on, he was always taking the lead, like asking questions, all this stuff. And I was like, hey, who the fuck are you to be asking all these questions, man? Like, where were you? And even though I have nothing to back up any of my accusations towards him, I didn't see him at all.
It's like playing Clue.
Yeah, it's a lot. $5. It's
does that say
shit.
2 million ratings on the Google Play Store?
That's what it looks like.
2 million. Yep.
With 4.5 stars.
Wow.
Yeah. So it must be really fun on the phone as well.
Crazy.
Why would they do it for free? I guess cosmetics, maybe.
Yeah, it looked like there was some purchasable DLC in the Steam store. Yeah, in-app purchases, contains ads. So, yeah, they're making their money on mobile.
Good for them, man.
Yeah, that's cool.
The art is so...
Is this the new Fortnite, man? Is this the new Battle Royale? It's just these like little tiny, like nobody cares games.
And how do you do it on your phone? Like, I guess you're talking through your microphone. You have to talk, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I will at some point play this game.
Now is the time, dude. It's not going to last.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people are playing.
It's going to be a flash in the pan.
But, okay, yeah, over 30 million installs. Is that, or is that 60? It looks tiny. Can't see.
One more 50 thing.
50 million installs.
Wow. I did want to say, you know, when you kick off the wrong person, you're voting people off the island, basically, right? Mm-hmm. When you kick off the wrong person, those people's tasks weren't complete. So they have to do it as a ghost to get it done, or maybe other people can do it. But
so they're still in the game when they get kicked out.
But you're also hurting your chances of saving the ship every time you kick out a healthy person, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's that. It really sucks when you and you're like, I got kicked off when I wasn't. I was like, guys, you're making a mistake. You're out the airlock, just fucking floating away. And then it says he was not an imposter. You're like, I fucking told you guys. Gummy played 4 games with us, right? Mm-hmm. 3 of them he got kicked out, and he wasn't the imposter. He's just really bad at like coming up with like, I don't know. Like, everybody just thought he was a murderer, dude. And then the 4th time, he actually was. And it all worked out. And I was like, I don't think we were clever on that. I think it was just a process of limit. Eventually, he was going to be the murderer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. We'll have to get a little game night going with that.
What else have, basically, you know, since I've been babysitting a lot more, it's been all Netflix, guys. And I hope you guys have a Netflix account because, that's what I've been watching. Taco Chronicles season 2 came out last year. I was gushing over this, and I think you really should fucking, everybody should watch this and watch it in Spanish because,
that's the only way to watch it.
Yeah. Really? There's no audio. Our English dub.
Why would they dub something like this?
I don't know. Just people that don't want to read.
I don't know, man. They usually don't dub a lot of TV shows unless it's like a big show, like The Simpsons or something. Well,
all the shows are dubbed in Spanish. It's just maybe not the other way around.
I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway, it needs to be watched in Spanish just because each taco has its own voice actor. Like representing itself, and I think they do a really good job. Anyway, season 2 is kind of a big letdown because they hit all the greatest tacos in the first season. There wasn't a whole lot of like tacos that I've had or even heard of in season 2. The only 2 good ones I would say was burritos, which was a kind of a stretch because it's not a taco, and the other one is like the American taco, the like crunchy. That's the Taco only Bell. Here. Yeah, the Taco Bell, basically.
Taco Bell Crunchwrap.
And that's basically what Taco Bell popularized it. But it was just because Mexicans wanted tacos and they just used the ingredients that were available in the United States. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say it's a must watch for season 2. Season 1, though, must watch. Netflix.
I couldn't get through the first episode, man. Like,
you're fucking crazy.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not like a foodie or anything like that, but it was just like a lot of slow motion footage of meat cooking. And then, yes. You know, they act like it's so important. It's just like,
it is so important.
Like, these little minute details between like different kinds of meat, and they act like it's this astounding breakthrough. Like,
it is. Yep. So, what else did I watch? Oh, Away. That's, Hilary Swank is the star of a show where a group of astronauts try to get to Mars. They start off on a moon base, which is probably good. It's all really accurate looking and sounding, except for all the extra shit they bring themselves. I've heard that like every pound is about like $200,000 that you want to take into space just because of the weight. Of extra stuff like water, all that stuff. It's $200,000, and they have like Christmas lights shit up there. And I'm like, all right, but everything else, you know, you would think it's like a sci-fi show, but it's a lot more of a drama about the crew, and it's just really well done. So, like, something bad will happen on the ship because otherwise, why would you watch? Mm. And then it cuts away to one of the crew's past. And how that their past will help them solve that problem. Not specifically just like that. Not like Slumdog Millionaire. Mm-hmm. But like the cutaways to the drama is actually a little tear-jerking. Not that I cried, but like like a lot of good emotional scenes, and I'm only invested. They basically tricked me into watching a drama, Bobby, because it's on a space station or a spaceship. You know what I mean?
It reminds me of Lost in a way. Like they're all stuck somewhere and then it flashes back to their past.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Somehow, like, you know, their past kind of plays into like whatever's currently going on. Like, uh-oh, this guy might have been a terrorist or something.
Yeah. And the acting is superb. It's really good. And I like how the characters are evolving. It's just like the tough guy doesn't stay the tough guy. And, you know, the mysterious one kind of opens up. And it's not like these hard-nosed character archetypes and they stick to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really like this show.
Do characters not usually have arcs in TV shows?
I don't know, man.
Man, I don't know, dude. I don't know if I could do that one. Looks too dramatic for me.
Yeah.
Wait, who is this guy?
He's like the most famous fucking astronaut, dude. What,
Buzz Armstrong?
No.
Neil Armstrong?
He's a Canadian.
Buzz Aldrin?
Sniper's about to throw his computer on the floor. He's fucking pissed at you. He's the guy who played a guitar in space. I don't know. He was recently. Yeah, recently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with space news.
So now you took my Switch.
Mm-hmm. Brought it back.
Okay. Did you only played one game?
I played a little bit of Mario Odyssey? Quest, Odyssey. I played a little bit of it just because I want to try it out.
Yeah.
You talked about how that one has some extra functionality if you detach the controllers. Really, the only thing I noticed is you could throw the hat just by doing like a flicking motion with it.
You also jump by doing the left one.
That's way too much work, man. It's way too much. I can't be just like doing this shit like while I'm playing a video game like a crazy person. No, man, I played it like in... with the controllers attached, you know, like it was a portable gaming device.
It's so funny that you like all about the retro stuff, but you won't want to see where, you know,
because it's kind of disappointing, man. It really is kind of disappointing.
You think Mario Odyssey is a bad game?
I liked it. I kind of liked it, but I would have liked it a lot more if I was younger, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I didn't play enough of it to really like talk about it in depth. I did play quite a bit of Breath of the Wild though.
Okay.
And this is a very different Legend of Zelda game than I'm used to. Like right off the bat, I'll tell you, like not super into it. Although like I only did 5 shrines. I didn't really play that much. It took me an embarrassingly long amount of time to figure out how to get to the one in that cold area. You know, I knew I had to like eat the peppers, but then I figured out, oh, I got to cook them. Well, where do I go to cook? There was a lot of running.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, I was a little frustrated just with the controller. By the way, the pro controller that you had in there, yeah, that's a necessity. Got to have that.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. But still, you know, I'm not good with a controller and using analog sticks in particular. So, you know, aiming with a bow and arrow and like the combat was very difficult for me. It's just, it's not instinctive. And I was under the assumption that we had all kind of like settled on a button configuration, like A does this, B does that, Y does this, X does that.
Not but, Nintendo, dude.
No, like everybody's mixing it up on me and it's very confusing now. So I had a real tough time with that. Like I do, it's such a strange Zelda game because it's just so open world. It just kind of plops you in. There's very little dialogue, which I appreciate. Like you go talk to a guy, you know, and he kind of guides you through some stuff, but it doesn't overload you with like all this story and all this text dialogue right up front, which I really enjoyed. And, you know, the shrines with the puzzles are cool. And I ran across an area where there's this huge boss, obviously I couldn't fight him then, but I was like, that would be a fun fight. Like just taking down this huge rock monster. So I see like how the game could be really great, but I don't know. It didn't really grab me in that way.
Never grabbed me either, man. And I've played, you know, I don't know, 10 hours of it, but I've never played consecutive, you know, 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever. It's always been like, I'm on a trip. Let me jump in here. And then I got to relearn all the mechanics and stuff.
Yeah.
And so after that 20 minutes, I only have another 40 minutes to actually play, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't really get it either, but people say, you know, one of the greatest games of all time. I don't get it. I'm sure it's there.
I think you really have to make it over that hump. And I would have enjoyed this so much more if it were on PC and I could use a keyboard and mouse. I could have really got into it because it's kind of a chill game, you know, it's kind of peaceful. And, you know, you're running around there. The inventory management, like just doing all that stuff with a controller, I just really bugged me, man. Like really frustrated me.
It's pretty common. Like most games, it's like shoulder buttons to move screens. And then that's just how they all are.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, select, like to cook something, you got to go in the inventory, trigger over to like that other area, select the thing, go to another menu, select hold, then go select the other stuff that you want to hold. And then you hold that and drop it in the fire. It's just a lot of, I don't know, doing that with the controller, with as little experience as I have with the controller is just, it kind of killed it for me. Someone messaged me this week, False Josiah, one of our listeners, yeah. And he was talking about how he'd been playing Zelda games consistently throughout his life. So he kind of filled me in on all the other ones. And there's so many Zelda games out there at this point, and I've really only played like the ones like Super Nintendo and back. So
right.
I've missed quite a bit. But he mentioned one called A Link Between Worlds, which was on the 3DS, and it's basically a sequel to A Link to the Past. So it uses the same map, and I don't know if it's like a direct sequel, if it's tied together in any way, but I looked at it, man, and it looked like, oh my God, that looks just like A Link to the Past, but with, you know, really good graphics. And,
You're going to try it out?
I might. I don't know if I'd go out and buy like a 3DS just for that.
There's got to be an emulator, right? Or no?
I don't know. Because when did a 3DS come out? That was like 2010.
Fuck if I know, man.
I think it was like 2010. So I don't know. When you start getting to emulators that late in the game, sometimes they get a little weird. So I don't know. I would like to check it out and just see what that game's about. But I don't know if I feel like Breath of the Wild like really took a different direction here with that whole 3D adventure, like open world type thing. But
it's
I
not
think
the first one. I think
there's been other ones that have done it.
Yeah.
But this one just felt, and I kind of admired for it. This one is just like so let you do your own thing, figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. Especially not having to skip through so much dialogue, man. That's what really kills it.
So it's basically UI and controller issues is the only thing holding you back.
Yeah, dude. It is so hard for me to play with the controller. And I know like people are listening to me and being like, dude, get over it. You know, because you got to understand, I stopped playing consoles right when the analog stick came out. Yeah. I never built that muscle memory for analog sticks. So I always just like, when I use an analog stick, I use it like a D-pad, dude. I just like snap my finger all the way over. I don't do any sort of gradual movement. Yeah. Like it's very difficult for me. So I don't know. And I would have to spend years like kind of honing that skill. And I'm just no thank you.
Who are these guys? Dude, I don't like them.
Some sort of cooking show we're seeing here.
I think they're cooking all the things from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Salted grilled meat.
Yeah, the whole recipe thing was kind of confusing to me, but I figured it out. You know what's crazy though, in this whole emulator week that I had, you know, I mentioned I'd got into watching a lot of speed runs and particularly of older games, and I'm only talking about some right now, but honestly, dude, like I'd played so much more than this. And I stumbled across not a speed run, but like Dr. Mario Championship. I tried playing Dr. Mario again, by the way. Oh my God, that game's so unnecessarily difficult. Like,
what do you mean? The controls?
Okay, so you have Tetris, right? Here's the evolution of it. You got Tetris, you know how that works. You match the shapes, you get a line, it disappears. Then Dr. Mario comes out where there's these viruses in there and you've got to put the pill there. But what I'm used to is Kirby's Avalanche or Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, where like if you drop something onto a level, the other one falls down and Dr. Mario is not like that. It is so difficult. And it wasn't too long like playing this game where I was like, nope, not interested at all. But I was like, there's no Dr. Mario speedrun there. So I started looking up like you know, world championships. And the craziest thing happened, dude. The 2018 Dr. Mario World Champion is my buddy who grew up next to me three houses down, who I spent my...
What are you talking about right now,
dude? I am not kidding you, dude. Look it up right now. 2018. He came in second place 2019, and obviously 2020 they didn't have one. He goes by... His name's Patrick, but like his gaming name is Packy. But, you know, sometimes they...
Did you ever play this game together?
We played all games together, dude. I used to be able to beat this guy at Kirby's Avalanche, but... I've talked about him before, like, dude, how he's like smashed through MC Kids on the Nintendo one day.
And you can't contact him. Oh, he might be.
Oh, no, dude. Like, no, this isn't him right here. I don't know who this guy is. Michael G. No, Heather Ito. Yeah, I know. She look up Heather versus Patrick, 2018 Dr. Mario World Championship. That's a good match. But no, dude, my dad talks to him all the time. And like every time I talk to my dad is like, he tells me what Patrick's up to and this or that. They're like, Facebook.
Hey, dude, it'd be a great podcast guest, dude. Talk to your old friend, dude. Bring him in here. You want to go down nostalgia lane? That's exactly. Reach out.
The funniest
human thing, contact.
I haven't talked to him in so long. But when I, for a brief period of time back in like maybe 2005 or six, when I moved back with my parents for like a few months, I remember him coming over and we loaded up the Nintendo and I sat there and I watched him play Legend of Zelda and he just beat it like 45 minutes just right in front of me and just watched the whole thing.
Although he hasn't moved.
No.
Yeah. That's why he's a fucking.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but he kind of takes care of his mom. It was actually real tragic, dude. I think around like 15, his dad died of cancer and it was like a long thing.
Way to make me feel like an asshole.
Yeah.
Dude.
Well, there you go. But what's so funny, like I'm watching this, I'm like, world champion, what? And I've known about this too. Like my dad's told me, like, oh, yeah, he's got some trading card here he wanted me to give you. It's a Twin Galaxies trading card. It's like a picture of him with fucking what's his name that always wears the ref shirt. You know, they spoofed him in Wreck-It Ralph. He's a competitive gamer, mostly Tetris, but he's gotten into Dr. Mario apparently. And what's crazy is watching these videos, he has the exact same expression playing games than when we played games. Damn, dude. Like, I look at him and I'm like, dude, that is the exact same face, the exact same mannerisms, the way like he moves the controller.
Fucking
like
crazy, dude.
Yeah, dude. Apparently, like he's got like a day job. He's a super smart dude. He's got like an engineering degree from UCSD, man. Like, he's super smart. And he probably is the reason like I became a better gamer, because we would play everything together, versus like co-op, like whatever. So like I had to kind of be, you know, pretty good myself to keep up with him. And we were always kind of like, you know, kind of fighting, like competing with each other.
He was your co-op buddy.
Yeah.
Or versus buddy, whatever it was.
Yeah. So, I mean, good for him, man. That's
reach out to the guy, please.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm sure he could sit down here and be like, have a crazy cool story about back in the day.
I don't know. I've told you, man, he's a really smart guy. He's got an engineering degree from UCSD. He plays retro video games.
A little on the spectrum or something.
Well, I don't know about that, but I don't know. Although I did watch some of like his interviews when he won and yeah, he did all right for those, but yeah, I don't know. But yeah, dude, I don't want to call him out and say like, yeah, this guy's a weirdo, dude. Cause I was a weirdo too. Like, we are two nerds.
We are weird. Look at us. Yeah. We're sitting on red couches right now.
I mean, we're doing all right. We can pass for normal, man. We can pass.
You want to talk about fucking normal, dude? I have a big fucking truck. Like, it's ridiculously big. Mm-hmm. It's stupid. I have a double cab 2500 Sierra HD. So, and then extended bed. So it's like two cars in one and then a fucking extended cab. What is that? Oh,
I'm sending a message. Oh my God. Don't be weird, dude.
It's not weird to reach out to somebody, especially because
what's weird is somebody else reaching out pretending to be me.
Right. Hi, it's Bobby. So Sniper is our AI bot, and he is reaching out to, Patrick right now, and he is not, it looks like he's gonna go through with it. It says,
oh God, please don't.
Patrick, hi, it's Bobby. And then hi Patrick, remember when we used to play Dr. Mario back home? I'm not being weird, just want to say hi. This isn't Bobby, sorry. Actually, I'll just let Bobby do this.
This is riveting, hearing you read this.
I thought it was going to be funny, but it turned out not to be.
I would like to catch up with him, man.
Reach out. Just call him. Go over there.
No, I could. Yeah.
There you go.
But, you know, but reaching out to people is not really my thing.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm pushing so hard, dude.
Yeah.
So anyway, I go to the zoo today, the San Diego Zoo, and we got there early. Mm-hmm. And I'm that fucking asshole. I take up 2 parking spots, right? Not like side by side, but lengthwise. Because it's not going to work out otherwise.
You got a big.
Got to do it. Because if I park normally, my ass sticks out so much that it's going to.
Yeah, you might get clipped.
Yeah, not just that, but it's going to do more damage to whatever car clips me. Most likely. Anyway, so I take up the 2 spots. So we leave early, probably around 11:30. So I've been there for like 3.5 hours. So the parking lot's stuffed by then. And it took us a while to find the truck. And then I'm trapped, dude. I have SUVs on all sides of me. I can't get out, Bobby.
And who knows where those people are at?
Yeah, who knows where those people are at?
It's a big zoo.
I can't back out because the cars are, they're trying to maximize space.
Shit, dude, I would have called a tow truck.
To what?
To tow the people blocking me.
But they're not blocking me. They're in their normal spots. My truck is so big that I cannot make a normal turn.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So over the next 15 minutes, I was doing incremental inching back and forth like Austin Powers, jumping out of my truck, checking both sides. I was within a half inch on the left side when I finally made the fucking turn. Today, you know how embarrassing it is. Plus, it's the kind of having a stupid fucking truck. You know when the parking lanes they're one way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a one way one, but I have to go out the wrong way. So cars are continuously driving up to me. Oh, dude, I'm starting to sweat. It's like it's not good at all. Baby's crying. Oh, Jesus.
Don't they have, if you go further back in the lot, don't they have larger parking spaces?
Yeah, probably, man. Well, actually, they cut the parking lot in half so that half the people could come in or whatever. It's one of the weird things. San Diego Zoo does not charge for parking. I guess maybe because it's a city thing.
Yeah, they charge a lot to get in. But my parents have had year passes forever. And they got grandfathered in on this thing where they get free passes every year. So they always send me some. I had some, but they expired during quarantine. We couldn't use them. It was too bad. But I haven't been there. I usually go every year, man. I love the San Diego Zoo. I always check up on my water cat that is still alive somehow, dude. That thing's been there since I was like a little tiny kid. You never see it, dude.
Yeah, yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, I've seen it like once, like in its full form, like just out and about. And I'd seen him go into the water like one time. As many times as I've been to the zoo in my life, I have only seen that guy out and about once. Sometimes you can like see his tail up in a corner.
I was looking for him this time. I did not see him. I don't know if they moved the exhibit or maybe I just didn't go.
He's like right near the entrance, and then you walk down. I think you walk down towards like the, I don't know, it's like the crocodiles or the apes or something. But it's a cat, and it's a very large cat, and it's got webbed feet, like webbed claws, like big webbed claws. If you look at a lot of cats, they have like webbed feet, but this one has like huge like webs in between it.
Yeah, and he dives into the water and catches fish.
Jumps right in the water, catches fish.
Yeah. The coolest thing at the zoo for me today was the grizzly bear, the American grizzly bear. The boy was out, the male.
Yeah.
Dude, just his ass. That's all we could see because he was kind of obscured. The size of his ass.
Is that a new exhibit, the bear?
He's never out. I've never seen the grizzly before. I think that's why it was so cool to me. Yeah. There was probably 25 people just looking at this bear's ass going, how big is that fucking thing? Because it was like an elephant's ass. That's how big it looked. Like it looked like it could just come and kill us all. He's gigantic, dude. I don't know how big he is, but he's huge.
Hmm. Yeah, during the summer when the zoo stays open late, if you go across the bridge at, I think, around 8 o'clock at night, they have these little bubble machines that spray bubbles all across, and they have lights, and they play music, and it's like this cool thing.
Yeah, we went last year for Halloween, and Mila is such a wimp, dude. She is scared of everything. She doesn't like going to the zoo because she's scared of most of the animals. She's just scared in general. She's just a scared person. And so we went for nighttime at during October last year, and we're there with Ray. And so she's so scared because I feed into it too. Like I'm telling her, oh, like you don't want that thing to jump out here because it'll rip your head off, stuff like that, right? So anyway, she's double scared. And then there was a branch that I was able to reach into one of the things. So I grabbed the branch and I started shaking it. I was like, oh my God, here it comes. Ray, his girl, they all lost their fucking shit, dude. Mila started crying. Don't regret anything.
Oh, wow.
Toughen up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I love going to the zoo. I'm glad to hear it's back open. A lot of people there?
Well, half, right? So
okay,
they cut the parking lot in half. So,
and dude, if you go to the zoo and you're like, I'm going to see everything,
no.
Like it is really hard. It's going to take you a long time, and unless you like work out a little bit, you're going to be hurting by the end of that.
I had to push a stroller up like a really steep hill. I was breathing hard at the end, especially with the mask on.
It is a large area, and there is a lot of winding paths going down.
So but we do have the best zoo.
Yeah, like, it's a great zoo.
Yeah.
It's an awesome zoo. I like it better than the Wild Animal Park, which is a little further up north.
Sucks.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, I watched some movies this week. I've been slowly making it through all the Hellraiser movies. I've never actually seen all of them. Don't bother, by the way.
Are they all the same director or just...
No. They switch around a lot. So the first two... Well, okay. So last summer I read The Hellbound Heart, which is what Clive Barker wrote, and they were going to make into a movie. And he was always upset because everything that he wrote, people messed it up when they adapted it to movies. So he's like, I'm going to do this one. And if you watch the first Hellraiser, it's kind of confusing as a movie, but it is almost exactly like the book. Like the book's a little bit better because it explains a little bit more stuff. Right. But yeah, I mean, he accomplished his goal. Like it's just like the book. And I think it works. Like it was really popular. Hellraiser 2 comes out pretty good. That one's pretty good. But
better
then after
than the
that,
first?
I don't know. It's kind of different in a way. You know, they take it further. They got a little bit bigger of a budget. They actually go into hell and explore some new things, but still it kind of feels like a small movie. The problem with, the Hellraiser series though, is there's a steep drop off, like right after the first two movies. They just kind of tank, dude. They're all pretty bad. I think there's about 10.
Jeez,
8 or 10.
You watch them all?
No, I'm getting there, though.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Somehow 10's going to be marvelous, dude.
Well, it's like 8 in a documentary, I think. But they're interesting. So I watched like Bloodlines, which is the fourth one. And Adam Scott, who is a kind of famous comedian, you know, he was... He was the guy that married Leslie Knope in Parks and Rec. Like, you know, Adam Scott, he was in Step Brothers as kind of the dick of an older brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That guy, he was in Bloodlines. It's his first movie ever. I'm like, dude, that's hilarious. Okay, cool. Still a terrible movie though. Bloodlines. Eh, okay. But yeah, then they keep getting worse. And there's like one that's like a noir movie pass. And then the one that I watched the other night was Hellworld. And I was excited for this one. This came out in 2005. And here's the plot to this movie.
Wait, help me out. Like, I don't know anything about the Hellraiser. It was too scary for me when I was a kid. Like,
yeah, it's intense, man. Yeah. It's very gory.
What's the idea? Just hell gates open up? And...
It's like this. So Clive Barker got the idea of like going to these gay S&M bars and seeing people all done up in like leather and chains and stuff. So the idea is that there are people out there who, you know, are sexually aroused by pain, and they're always looking for more, more, more. They can't be satisfied. And like this guy named Le Marchand, this French guy, created this toy that if you open this configuration, it was like
a cube, right?
Yeah, it's called the Lament configuration.
Okay.
If you open that, it's a really hard puzzle to solve, but if you open it, then it can, it can open up unseen pleasures, you know, like the ultimate pleasures. But what it turns out is it releases these guys called the Cenobites, the most famous one being Pinhead, the guy with all the nails in his head. And these guys, their idea of pleasure is pain. They see no difference between the two. So really they drag you into their I guess it's hell, and they torture you like eternally.
Jesus.
So yeah, and it's pretty brutal. Now the first movie is about a guy who like slowly makes it out of it. If they find like your remains and they pour blood on it, then it can bring you back into the world. And it's kind of this weird metaphysical thing that's explained a little bit more in the book. So like the first two movies are basically like this lady who was like kind of obsessed with this dude. Murdering people, seducing guys, bringing them back, cutting them up, and then pouring the blood in there to resurrect them. Yeah, it's gnarly, weird stuff.
Yeah.
But then they all the other movies kind of just, it was creatively bankrupt after the second one. There shouldn't have never been more movies, and they kept making them, so like you can really tell they're reaching. But Hellworld, here's the plot, man. 2005, everybody knows what Hellraiser and the Cenobites are, so much so that it's become a popular video game and everyone plays it online as an MMO.
Wow.
And, yeah. And if you reach a certain level, then you get a special invite to the Hellraiser party that happens once a year. So of course this group of, you know, young, hot idiots, they all get one of them being Henry Cavill, by the way, a 22-year-old Henry Cavill in this movie who gets a blowjob in public, then gets meat hooked and then returns as a Cenobite.
Of course.
Weird. So they all go to this party and then it turns out, you know, like they all get murdered, of course. And it's just like a slasher flick from there on out. But yeah, man, it blew my mind that it was Henry Cavill.
Is it worse than the other ones? Like three, four.
Yeah, it was just, it's also got Lance Henriksen, the guy who, I know him from Millennium or Pumpkinhead. You'd recognize him if you saw him. But yeah, it's not a good movie, but I totally enjoyed like a lot of the stupid parts of it, you know, like Henry Cavill and, getting meat hooked. See, there he is right there, dude. That is Superman.
Yeah.
That's him. And, you know, like the terrible acting, horrible ADR, just real bad across the board. The whole video game thing, which I wish they would have played up a little bit more.
Not only do we have the episode title, but maybe the new podcast title, dude. Young Hot Idiots.
Young Hot Idiots.
I fucking love it, dude.
But this is the lowest rated Hellraiser, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes and Letterboxd. Like, this is the one that everybody hates. And I totally see why, but this one kind of finally breaches that so bad it's good area where I can kind of get on board with it.
Gotcha.
So I'm cool with it, man. Let's do it. Hellworld. There were two Hellraisers released in 2005, by the way. I don't know why.
They probably were, they had nothing to do with each other, probably, besides
IP, right? No. Yeah, this was released by Dimension, which is the one that does all the other Hellraiser movies. But you know what's weird? Unrelated, kind of related, but not really. I heard recently that there was a fight for the rights over Friday the 13th, and that's why there hasn't been one in like 13 years, and it just kind of got cleared up. So there's going to be a new Friday the 13th movie kind of in the works.
I've been inching through Lord of the Rings extended editions. The first one is 4 hours and 10 minutes. Man, is it long, dude. I mean,
4 hours and 10 minutes.
Yes. And there's just like,
but the Lord of the Rings ones were good. It's the Hobbit ones where I'm just like, nah.
Yeah. I didn't like the Hobbit movies. But you could see why they cut a lot of it. It's just kind of like, it's for the super fans and it's kind of good for that. Mm-hmm. But for an 8-year-old Mila, It's
that's
too
way
much.
Too much, dude. A four-hour movie?
She watched it. I mean, not in one sitting, dude. That's what I'm saying. Okay. I'm inching through these things. We watch them like 20 minutes at a time. It's taking months.
Mm-hmm.
We're like almost done with the second one. The Battle of Helm's Deep is about to start. So that was probably my favorite scene throughout the whole series. So I'm happy to see that. But yeah, it's just, you know, anytime any two people are talking, she's just completely tuned out, and I'm tuned out kind of. I'm just watching the baby. It's just way too much exposition. But if you're a super fan, it's good.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, remember we were talking about the CGI, dude. It's not what it used to be, man.
Talking about Gollum specifically?
No, or just everything. All of it? Everything.
Okay. This was the early 2000s.
Yeah, I know. But it used to be my go to, like, this is what CGI should be. And because Gollum was fucking amazing. But now it's like, if it came out today, it wouldn't be like a blockbuster movie or anything. It'd be like a B movie. Mm-hmm. That's how it's the,
like Sharknado level CGI.
Yeah. Right. God, I hate to say that bad, but yeah. Anyway, the only reason I'm doing the extended editions is because it's the only versions that you can get in 1080p. Everything else, or 720 even. No, 1080p. 720 you can get the originals in. So that's the only reason I did it, because I wasn't going to watch it in 720.
Yeah. You know, I saw the second one twice, and I don't remember a thing about that movie. All I remember is the big trees when they join a battle or something.
Yeah. That's one of the worst CGIs, when one of the big trees is carrying the two fucking hobbits through the forest. Mm-hmm. It looks like they just fucking like pinned the hobbit on the tree. It just looks like so superimposed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I never saw the third one until way later, dude. Like, I'm talking like 2010 I think I saw the third one. I remember really liking it. That was, didn't that win an Oscar? Didn't one of these win Best Picture?
It was Best Picture. Return of the King got Best Picture, but I think it was kind of like them giving.
It's like for the whole series.
Yeah. Because I didn't think it was the best one, but some people did. I think you should rewatch these, Bobby. Not the extended editions. I know you'll never get through those, but the regular ones.
That'd be tough. Yeah. No, I would totally rewatch
these. This is known as probably the best trilogy of all time. Maybe that and Star Wars, maybe. But like the reviews on Star Wars are not very good. Not like just Return of the Jedi. I mean, Empire Strikes Back is like an 85 or something like that. They're not like super standout great films as far as reviews go.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like some of these movies have kind of passed critical reviews, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy. So yeah, the other movie that I watched was Quest for Fire. This is one that you recommended to me.
Recommend's a strong word, dude. Again, I was a kid and I was highly impressioned by this movie because I was like 12 when I watched it.
Wow, that's crazy, dude. There's a lot of boning in this movie.
Yeah,
there's a scene where he learns the missionary position in this movie.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
Because
I remember every scene. I don't know why.
It's a wild movie.
I saw it once.
That's crazy, dude. It's a crazy movie. I'm surprised I never heard of this before. It's got a bunch of different names because it's originally like a French film, and I think it's called like La Guerre des Feux, which is like the Battle of Fire. So I think it's got like a few working titles here, depending on where it was released. But it was released in 1981, and it does not use any CGI. It's all practical effects that I can tell. Because the early 80s, it reminds me so much of, what was that, Excalibur. That had a few like special effects in it, but still like they relied heavily on like a lot of practical effects. And it was a lot of like costume and wardrobe, just like this. So it's just like that time of filmmaking, it was really expensive to do special effects, and also they didn't look very good a lot of the time. So I don't know, like unless you were ILM or something, or Steven Spielberg or George Lucas, you didn't really mess with it too much. Like there's a lot of bad special effects out there, but there's, it's interesting to see a movie like this where it's like they've really put a lot into the costume and wardrobe. They got everybody dressed up like Neanderthals.
That's
and they've
all
got
you have at the time.
Yeah. They've got like these elephants with like this. They put some weird like fur on it to make it look like a mastodon. I don't know how they got the saber tooth on the tigers, man. I don't know.
I don't remember at all.
But it was like, as far as being a movie, it felt a little slow by today's standards, but it's a super interesting idea. Like the beginning of the movie is a text crawl that explains to you, like in early man, fire was super important. Fire was life. Like everything was about fire. And it's about this tribe of people who they don't know how to make fire. So they only get it when like lightning strikes a tree or there's like lava or something. So they have like this one guy who keeps a hold of like the special flame. And then from that flame, they can make other like campfires or whatever. And then they get attacked one day and that flame goes out and everybody's in a panic. So a few of them have to set off on a quest for fire, hence the title. So, I mean, I love that aspect. I love how there's no dialogue in this and they have to communicate through grunts. It's kind of like Far Cry Primal where they're talking to each other. They do have a fake language. Like you can kind of pick up like, oh, this is their word for fire. And then of course, you know, they set off on this journey and they come across all sorts of crazy things, including like another tribe that's more advanced than them.
But there's also a tribe that's, behind less, them, right?
Yeah, less
more animalistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they look more like apes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of them falls in love. The main character in this, by the way, is the guy who, I can't remember his name, but he played Stilgar in Dune, the leader of the Freemen. I don't know if you'd recognize him. But yeah, that's
well, Ron Perlman's in this, right?
Ron Perlman, yeah, but he doesn't have a main role. He's like
one of the ape
character.
Guys, isn't he?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's one of the trio, but he's not the main guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, great casting there. Ron Perlman totally looks like that dude. Or totally looks like a Neanderthal already. Yeah, Everett McGill is the name of the main character. And also Ray Dawn Chong. So she was in that's Tommy Chong's daughter, by the way. Yeah. And she did a lot of stuff in the 80s, including this horrible movie that I watched recently called Soul Man, about a kid who wants to qualify for an African-American scholarship, but he's white. So he takes tanning pills to turn his skin dark. And then he goes to college in blackface, his whole body covered head to toe.
It's comedy?
It's a comedy, okay. Dude. It's a comedy. It's pretty wild, man. James Earl Jones is in it. The chick from Seinfeld's in it. Yeah, it's nuts, dude. But yeah, so Ray Dawn Chong, she was also in Commando with Schwarzenegger, but she popped in a lot of 80s movies. Oh, and she's from Edmonton in Canada. That's where Sniper's from. Look at that craziness. Look at that. Yeah. So, I mean,
so
it's got
the movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I would have trouble recommending this to people now because it does move a little slow, but I really enjoyed it for all the reasons I just mentioned, the cast. And
let me see if I remember this right. See, I don't remember that. I thought they lost the fire because, the dumb guy dropped it in the water.
Yeah. Well, they get attacked and then everybody retreats and the survivors, they go meet out in a marsh. And then it's this big dramatic scene. He's running, he's holding the fire and he's like, ooh, ooh, you know, he's like yelling at them and they're like yelling at him and they like run towards him because it looks like he's going to fall. And then, yeah, he does fall
now,
and extinguishes the
and
flame.
Then fast forward to the end of the movie. Doesn't it happen again? Mm-hmm. But now they know, see the guy.
I mean, during the battle scene, like he drops the fire because he's kind of wounded or something. Yeah. But then at the end, yeah, they go on this huge quest for fire. They do all this crazy stuff. They come back. They have the flame. They give it to him. Yeah. And then the idiot drops it in the water again and everyone's pissed.
But now
they've learned from the other tribe. They've learned how to make fire. Yeah, so the girl teaches them how to make flames and it shows. So it's kind of showing evolution in a way.
God, this looks terrible now.
It looks pretty bad now, you know, you can tell it's like a bunch of people. Cause the whole time I'm watching this, they're jumping around like savages and they're doing like the monkey walk and stuff with the shoulders bobbing up and down. And I'm just thinking like, dude, imagine being a camera guy and watching this and just trying not to laugh, man. It just looks so ridiculous.
Yeah. That's it. The War of Fire.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I might rewatch this.
Yeah, it's I think it's about 2 hours, a little under 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Cool. What else we got?
BPM.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead and click that and give me some audio on that. We've talked about it a couple times, but now this is out. It's got very good reviews. So this is a Doom-like first-person shooter that is also a beats game, like
it's
audio surfer, a rhythm game. Yeah, yeah. I don't know how they pull it off because I haven't played it, but apparently all the gunshots and the explosions go into the sound effects. I don't know if they hold you back and you have to do it during a certain time, because there's nothing on screen that I've seen that would prompt you. Don't think this looks anything like any other rhythm game. It looks like Doom, or not as good graphics, but it's a Doom type game, and somehow the gunshots and everything go into the rhythm. So maybe they delay it so that it works. I'm not sure, but you can hear the soundtrack and it's super interesting. It's at 90% right now on Steam. It doesn't have a ton of reviews though. I was gonna pick it up, but it was like $25.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'm but it looks interesting. I want to play it.
Yeah, I would love to see how this, you know, how they executed this, because that's a really interesting idea, but seems difficult.
Yeah. Who knows how they pull that off?
Cool. Well, I just want to mention real quick, I was catching up on chat here, and DY Dynamite also says that the main character was the dad, the BDSM dad from People Under the Stairs, which not a lot of people know that movie, man. But
scared the shit out of me, man.
People Under the Stairs, it was a creepy movie. Yeah, dude.
It's about people that live in the walls, right?
It's about this weird, bizarre family that is just has this, I don't know, this weird, like, sexual crazy thing going on. And like these people, this little African-American kid and like his older brother, I think, are trying to break in and like rob these people. And then they find out like these people are nuts. So his brother gets killed and the kid has to like escape. And
maybe I haven't seen it.
There's like a guy with like his tongue cut out that lives in the walls.
Oh, maybe it is. I remember the person in the walls that really freaked me out.
Oh my God, that is him. I didn't recognize that. I haven't seen that movie in so long, dude. That's one that every time I hear about it, I'm like, dude, I got to rewatch that one. Because I remember that being like, I remember being unsettled by that watching it. Because I saw it when I was young. Yeah, that was a gnarly movie. People Under the Stairs.
It scared the shit out of me, dude. I was so scared after that. He looks familiar too, that kid.
Yeah, he was in something else. Like, he's been in things. He does look familiar.
Yeah.
The main character. All right, last thing I want to talk about is Blazing Sails. There's a pirate sale going on right now on Steam, apparently.
There's like three sales going on simultaneously.
Yeah, there's like a THQ sale going on. But I looked at the pirate sale, and I saw this game pop up, just released September 9th. It's a Battle Royale pirate game. And the graphics look a lot like that other pirate game. What is it? You know, the big one. A very cartoony graphics.
Yeah, not as good, though.
Yeah, and that one's more about adventure and exploring. There's a little bit of combat.
Yeah, this is more combat.
Sea of Thieves, that's it. But yeah, this Blazing Sails game. So, like, you get on a boat with a bunch of your friends, and you go out and you fight a bunch of other people who are on their boats, and you try to plunder and get treasure. And
sounds fun.
It sounds really cool. Like, and I love the graphics. I love the idea. The bad part about it is not a lot of people are playing this game, and I think it's because it's like $25 or $20. Like, it's not cheap.
How are the reviews?
I mean, the reviews are good, but I think they all say the same thing. Like, great game, but kind of expensive, especially for a game like this where you just need that player base. Like, a lot of people are complaining about not being able to get into games because, you know, they're not enough people playing.
How many people are playing right now, Sniper?
Does he have Augmented Steam? They changed their name. I don't think it's Augmented Steam anymore. It's something
enhanced
else.
Enhanced Steam?
No, it used to be Enhanced Steam. Now it's Augmented Steam. Oh, okay. That's right.
Weird choice.
Yeah, or you can go to Steam Charts and check there. But yeah, I mean, cool idea, man. Like, I love pirate games. Yeah, 254 all-time peak, 100 people playing right now. Not enough.
Do you have any idea how many people per round? 40, maybe?
I think it varies. Like, you could get on a ship with just, like, a couple people, like, two or three, or you can get on with, like, a whole crew. Like,
it's kind of like Sea of Thieves, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's too bad, man. I think that would be really cool if that game was cheaper or free to play. Like, if that was free to play, dude, I would have absolutely just installed that right away.
The pancake thing. It's not a question. I didn't think it was a question. Is it a question?
No, he had a question as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's time for listener questions.
Listener questions.
All right. This one's coming from Pancakes. Again, using the Steam group here. Love you guys and glad you are still doing the podcast. Not looking forward to getting back on Zoom with my middle school kids. Hear that. Anyway, I'm with you on the hippie deodorants not working, but the real threat of aluminum, zirconium, etc. is real. I tried all the alternative deodorants, crystals, etc. And after nearly 20 years, my wife found one that works great. And he's got a link there. This is for Native. It's called nativeco.com.
Or Native, talking about
nativecos.com. You can get them at Target of all places, but I have bought a case of vanilla scent via Amazon, tried three different scents and they all worked great and help us. And she has armpit hair. Take care and hope that helps. So this goes back a couple of weeks cause he posted this a while ago. I didn't see it till recently. So we were talking about, it came up randomly about how my girlfriend was trying to like find these deodorants that don't have aluminum because that could give you Alzheimer's late in your life. It's like this whole study. And
I think the aluminum is only in the antiperspirants, I thought.
So I was talking to my girlfriend about this and that's what she was explaining to me. Like the antiperspirants are, I don't know if that's where the aluminum's at, but those are bad for you too, because they stop you from sweating, and that's like not a good thing for
your body. Yeah, I'd always get a rash when I use them.
Yeah, I don't know. But here's the crazy thing. My girlfriend has used this deodorant before. I can't remember what kind she had, but I asked her about it because I was like, hey, check this out. Would you think this would be any good? And she's like, I've totally used that before, and you said I smelled. So I don't know. Maybe that didn't work for her, but, you know, to each their own.
How often do you tell her you smell? Maybe she has this complex, dude. Maybe you're the one, dude. Maybe it's your upper lip that smells.
Maybe. I don't know, man. But I don't know. I think she's using like a Dove one that's supposed to not have it right now, and it's been working well for her. But I do like, I don't know. As I get older, I start worrying about this stuff. So I'm interested in this type of thing. These are a little more expensive than your average deodorant, though. Like, you're going to pay a little bit of a premium, but look at the flavors they got here. Cucumber and mint.
What? I can't taste through my armpit, man.
Well, you smell it, dude.
I guess.
That's the whole thing of deodorant. Pumpkin spice latte. That's a no. Nope.
I go with Dove natural. It's just like white. That's it. It's like as basic as you can get.
And I've been using great. Old Spice for like ever.
You like your scents, man.
Unscented. Okay, that's a good one. Coconut and vanilla. I don't know if I could do that. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested. How often do you put on deodorant?
Every other day.
Every other day?
Yeah, probably.
You don't put it on every day?
I don't think so.
God, dude, I got to go.
I work at a construction site, dude. Nobody works around me. Like, I'm covered in dirt when I come home. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, but still, like, that's not part of your normal, like.
I don't smell a lot either. And I also shower at the end of the day, not at the beginning. Hmm. So, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I put it on every single morning, but sometimes I feel like if I'm running around and I'm sweating a lot, then yeah, I got to put more on, but.
I feel like I stink. Do I ever smell? I'm sure I've smelled before. I'm like a smelly guy, Bobby.
I don't know, man. We sit to a couch apart, so.
We've been pretty close before. We made out that one time, too.
Yeah. But yeah, if anyone's looking for some all-natural deodorant here, Native Co. And the stuff that did not work for me 100% was some weird, like, granola thing or something. I remember my buddy who used to live up in Humboldt, like, he was all about it for a little while, and then like I tried it, and I was like, "No, it's not working for me."
Yeah,
but I don't know, dude. This the reviews on this is pretty good.
I don't know. Apparently, it made your girlfriend smell, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Maybe she had the pumpkin spice latte, man. Yeah, I don't know.
That's not so good. Leslie's asking if you started painting, Bobby.
Yeah, I did.
How's it coming out?
Well, I messed up and I started putting a gloss on first, and I'm like, this doesn't look right. This seems super watery. And then I was like, oh, okay. It says gloss right there. Because a lot of we're talking about the Necron Warrior paint set, by the way, that Nick got us. A lot of the videos, these people are just like doing it their own way. They're using different paints. They're like, oh, I do this or that. I'm like, so it was kind of hard for me to follow along with the paints that I have. But yeah, I did start. I've got like my first practice one, and I'm just like, you know what? However bad this one looks, that's just how it looks. We'll see. And
you got four other or three others.
Yeah. And it's tough because I can only do about 15 minutes at the time before like my hands start getting kind of shaky, or like it just kind of becomes, again, dude, I can't use controllers, man. Yeah. And I can't paint with these little fine point brushes. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been doing it, like, in spurts, but I'm actually letting a coat dry right now.
Nice. Can't wait to see them.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do the first one, and, like, hopefully there's an improvement after that, but I'm kind of thinking, like, of mixing it up. Like, if I feel happy with the first... It does take a long time, man. Like...
They're so small. Why does it take so long? Because how fine the brush is?
Well, you got to be precise, but you got to put a layer on. See, like, this guy, he's doing the whole thing in black.
That's like, probably just a base coat.
Yeah, I guess. But like, I'm doing the base coat in like this bronze type color.
Ooh, look at that though.
Oh, now he's putting on the bronze. Okay.
Yeah, I think you need a base coat. Well, anything I've looked at. No, I haven't touched mine.
Dude, the one that I'm using, the bronze that I'm using says base right on it. So
that looks sick.
Yeah, I'm getting there, man. But it's taken a while. And you think it would go quick because it's small, but you have to be so precise with them. And also you have to like put on a coat, let it dry. And I don't know how long you have to let it dry for, but I've been giving it about like 45 minutes. Maybe that's too long.
It's crazy how like, you know, it's a little piece of plastic, but that thing looks like it's been in battles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I mean, I was watching some of the videos, and there's people who were like really into it and explaining like, oh, this is how you kind of make it look like it's got some wear and tear on it and stuff. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do all all that. Maybe we'll see.
That's cool looking though.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's coming along. I'll post pictures soon. I'll do some like, maybe I'll take pictures through the process. Let's see. Next question from Gerotron. Bobby, have you listened to the Dr. Death podcast about the killer neurosurgeon in Texas? Thought about this when you mentioned a different Dr. Death in the last podcast. Yeah, there's a lot of Dr. Deaths out there. There's like a wrestler named Dr.
Death. Way too many, I would say. Yeah. More than one is too much.
Yeah, I mean, there was the, what was the guy that was
Kevorkian?
Yeah, Kevorkian. Then there was the wrestler. And then there was the guy that I mentioned from that Errol Morris documentary, The Thin Blue Line. And then apparently another one. And I got to say, I've been, since I mentioned that, I've been getting a lot of like true crime recommendations. Let's all calm down on the true crime docs, man. The true crime recommendations. Like, I don't know. I'm not like against those. Like, I could get into one, but I swear every time I go over to my girlfriend's house, that's always what's on the TV.
Well, watch one together with her.
No.
These good documentaries.
No.
No.
I mean, maybe it would have been cool to watch Thin Blue Line with her, but I don't know. She's always watching those TV shows, and it's always like the same. Dude, I walk in the door, and it's like that dark, ominous music and some, you know, serious narrator talking about finding blood and semen at the scene. And, you know, that was the last time they would ever see their daughter. You know, like just every time I walk in the door, that's what's playing. Something on Charlie Manson or whatever. I'm just like, dude, that has a psychological effect on me, dude. You start thinking, like, I can't leave the house if you watch too much of that stuff. So. Yeah. And I don't know. Did you ever listen to Serial?
I did. Yeah. I finished season one and I started season two and I was digging it, I feel like.
So do you think, because that was like a lot of people's entry into podcasting. Like that really blew the lid off.
Well, they did a really good job on it. And that's what it is. It's a real a true crime thing. It really makes it sound like the kid didn't do it. Right.
I mean, yeah, but that's the thing. Like, there's no answer. Right. Yeah. And that's what people kind of got.
He's still in jail. Think. Yeah. Nothing ever happened.
I don't know, dude. I feel like we went through this phase of really sensationalizing crime for a while. And there was that other TV show that was real popular too. I can't remember, but it was just like
Make It a Murder.
Yeah, I think that was the one.
That was giant. Yeah.
Yeah. And just I kind of got turned off to it. So like for me the other week when I was like, I watched a true crime doc and I really enjoyed it. That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
That's like a big deal for me.
Because it comes loaded already. It's just like, fuck, I don't want to watch another one of these.
Yeah.
Or anything in that genre.
But I don't want to shoot down anything that people recommend. I'm sure there's some great stuff out there, but, you know.
And then at the end of the day, usually it's not a satisfying ending. It just makes you
think. It usually isn't. And that's what I liked about the Errol Morris one. It was like, dude, that was black and white. There's no way you could refute that evidence. And in fact, the guy got released from prison a year after that.
Dude, there's these guys called the Innocence Project. A couple guys have been trying to exonerate innocent people that are in jail for like the last 20 years or whatever. And they were on Rogan. And man, some of the stories, dude, Rogan's just crying for like 5 minutes straight. Wow. Yeah, dude, like super heavy things. They're like out there doing really, really important work that nobody else is doing. And definitely.
I think I remember hearing about that.
They've been at it for a long time. But
I've heard about this. There was a guy, they were going to take his case and they ended up doing it and did it. Yeah, I've heard about this.
Yeah, you should listen to that podcast, though. It's a really good one. The ones where
recommending Rogan's a true crime talk. Everyone's got one. A true crime podcast. Yeah. But, dude, I mean, I get it. They are interesting. And, like, what was so astounding about the Thin Blue Line is just, like, such a phenomenal failure of the American justice system. Like, not only did the justice system fail, it actually worked against the well-being of everybody involved. Mm. It accused the wrong person, and because of that, the other person was let go and went on to commit other crimes. The other person that they let off ended up going and getting arrested for other crimes and then ended up killing some guy and then ended up going to jail for that and getting executed in 2004 for that. So it's like lives would have been saved had it not been for like this complete fuck up, dude. And that's just, incredible that we are at the mercy of that system.
It gets pretty dark too, dude. These guys at the Innocence Project were talking shit about Kamala Harris, and they're as left as it gets, right? Mm-hmm. But her specifically, she was TA for a long time, and she, according to what the way they put it, she was worried more about her perfect score of like fucking mm-hmm. sending everybody to jail than obviously. Yeah,
that's the exact same case in the Thin Blue Line.
Yeah.
The reason they went after the other guy who was actually innocent was because he was older and could be charged with a death sentence. Mm. The younger kid, because he was too young, he was like 16 years old. So it would have looked better for them to get a conviction on the older guy.
Nuts.
And that's unfortunately what happens with just about, you know, with a lot of these, crazy, a lot of these people.
Let's go after the guy we can get, not the guy that we should get.
Yeah, dude. It's just like, it's like a fucking game, dude. Yeah. It's like a video game. Yeah. It's like, they have absolutely no stakes in it. Like, or no consideration for the person. Like a person's life is at stake, and it's just like, to them, it's just like, you know, a job thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Cause mostly it's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Way to bring it down at the end of the show here, Bob.
Wow. Well, blame Jirotron for asking that question. he's got another one here. He says, also, did you guys try Thrill of the Fight on VR yet?
No.
No. That VR kit has not moved since it's been.
It has not moved, dude.
Are you going to play it this week? Because I'll take it.
Take it.
Okay. I'll play Thrill of the Fight. It's free. It's a free game. So I will definitely check that out. And hopefully I can get it in the Oculus store so I can play it without the cable.
I want to play Half-Life Alyx, and I want to play Gorn. Those are the two that I really want to play.
Yeah, Gorn I'd like to check out, but I don't know, man. Half-Life Alyx seems like a lot of work.
Especially $50. What is it, 50? Probably, right?
Yeah, it's like $50, and it's a long game, and I don't know. It's hard for me to do VR for an extended period of time, although I did play a lot of Superhot right in a row.
Yeah.
Okay, last question from Neo Reloaded. Who would win an arm wrestle? Let's throw down and find out right now. I don't think there's anything we could arm wrestle on in here.
We'd have to move that over here. It'd be a whole thing.
Yeah, that'd be a whole thing. Maybe we'll make a YouTube video, but I don't know. You would probably win, but I don't know, man. I'm like the black guy from Over the Top. My whole body is an arm. Is that what it says? Because he's like lean, but he's strong, you know? Oh, did you ever see Over the Top?
Yeah. I just remember him like training his son or something.
Yeah.
His son was with him.
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone wins an arm wrestling match and wins back his son's love in the process and his semi-rig. Yeah.
Dude, I saw Adam Carolla talking about Cobra and how like...
Oh, dude, I love Cobra.
How like it's Stallone at his Stalloniest is what he said. And yet nobody talks about that movie.
No, because he did Cobra... because he was going to do another movie and he kept getting pushback for it. And like, he wanted it to be one way and like they kept fighting him. So he said, oh, fine, you go do your movie. I'm going to go do Cobra. And I can't remember what that movie is. It's a very popular movie that came out right around that time.
He's fucking badass, dude.
Dude, I fucking love Cobra.
Super over the top. The car is super badass.
The car, dude, that opening scene with the crazy guy in the supermarket.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Cobra's great. That like weird.
And nobody's seen it, like,
not a lot of people have seen Cobra.
Like Rambo, everything else is giant. Everybody knows everything.
That's the one where the poster is like, crime's the disease, he's the cure. Yes, there it is right there.
Uh-huh.
Crime is the disease, meet the cure. And it's just him. Like, everyone knows that image. I feel like people would recognize it's so that. Badass. But yeah, dude, the movie, there's like that part where like, you know, the hot chick in it is like doing a photography shoot with like sexy robots. And it's supposed to be like weird and futuristic, but it's like 80s version of it.
You always try to get robot, like in Rocky 2 or something. Yeah, I think it was Rocky 2, where he was super rich and they had a robot at the kid's birthday party, like serve the cake.
Yeah, there's the famous one in Rocky 4 where he buys Polly the robot, and it's this weird extended sequence where it's like, happy birthday, Polly. It's like this weird music thing. And somebody, there was like the whole blow up on like, I don't know, Twitter or wherever the hell people were talking about it. But he was talking about releasing like the, like a new cut of Rocky 4 for like an anniversary or something like that. Mm. And he like casually mentioned the robot scene would not be in there. And people were like pissed about it. It's just a scene that does not fit in the movie. Just out of nowhere that comes in.
I think he has a soft spot. Like, he's a man's man and all his movies are man's guys movies. Mm-hmm. But he has a soft spot for like weird robots.
Yeah, something with the robots. Right? At least in the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah.
Somebody put me back in the fridge.
That's back when you could understand him, too. Now it's kind of...
What happened?
I don't know, steroids. Dude, this was directed by George P. Cosmatos. I didn't know that. That guy directed Tombstone, a couple of other things. His son directed Mandy with Nicolas Cage. What else did he do? Oh, Leviathan. That's a great movie, dude. Underwater,
Tombstone.
Aliens.
Oh, you said
yeah, Tombstone. Oh, okay, First Blood Part 2. Yeah, dude. Hmm. Yeah, his son Panos Cosmatos is like doing some really interesting work now. He made like his last movie was Mandy, which is, dude, if you haven't seen that one, that's Nicolas Cage at his most Nicolas Cage. Like it doesn't get any more
cagiest.
Yeah, it's Cage at his cagiest. Dude, just 110% Cage in that movie.
What are you going to play next week? I have no idea, more Super Metroid.
And then maybe I'll see what's up with A Link Between Two Worlds.
There's got to be a fucking emulator for that, dude.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
But I don't know, dude. I don't know. Because sometimes, like, when you get into these newer ones, they're pretty hard to run, and you have to get the BIOS for them. Like, they'll give you the emulator, but not the BIOS. And the BIOS is the illegal one, so it's actually hard to find that. Mm. So, I don't know, dude. If it's, like, going to be a headache, I won't really look into it.
Is Nicolas Cage a good actor?
Have you ever seen Community, that TV show Community?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, there's a whole episode about that.
No.
And it breaks Abed's brain trying to find out if Nicolas Cage is a good actor or not.
So is he? What do you think?
Yeah, dude, I think he's fantastic. I think he's just a really weird guy and he doesn't give a shit.
What are the ones like you want to see him act really well? What would you say?
Well, I mean, Mandy, definitely.
Okay.
But people forget like Nicolas Cage in the 90s. This guy did Con Air, walked off the set, and in less than 24 hours went to the set of Con Air, Face Off.
Mm.
And just made, or maybe it was the other way around, but he made those movies back to back. And those movies were huge, man. Yeah. And we watch them now and they're like, yeah, kind of ridiculous. But Face Off actually is still pretty good. You know, John Woo's one of his first movies in America.
Who's the other, who's he switch faces with?
Travolta,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No more drugs for that man.
What's the point of switching faces with somebody? Wouldn't you just be just as notorious as they were both bad guys, right?
No, no. One was a bad guy. One was a cop or like, and he murdered his wife. So he had to switch faces with him and then he went undercover in prison and then just like got in with the criminal organization. Yeah. Dude, that shot, dude, John Woo can just, he knows how to make like those shots, you know, he's the guy with
especially
the doves and stuff.
Time.
Yeah. At that time. But I go back and watch those movies and I'm just like, that's not a good movie. That's fair,
yeah,
but that's
shots.
A killer shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the
over
shot
the top,
where he pulls out,
right?
It's like in the trailer, I think, where like he flips back this like long, like, I don't know. Coat that he's wearing.
Yeah.
He flips it back and there's those two guns like holstered on his back and he pulls those out and it's like in slow mo with like a low angle rising up. I'm just like, that's fucking cool, dude.
He did one of the Mission Impossibles, right?
Yeah, I think he did.
I think two motorcycles fly at each other and then somehow intertwine and flip. It's just all visual.
I think I remember them parodying that on the MTV one. I've only seen one Mission Impossible movie, dude. Isn't that crazy?
Some of them are pretty good, dude.
Like yeah, wasn't the last one really good?
Yeah, the last
Tom
one and
Cruise
the one before that was
ankle.
Pretty good. Yeah, 4 and 5 or whatever. Anyway, speaking for Bobby and myself, titties at their tittiest.
Forgot to mention, we're streaming in 1080p today, guys.
You're right, Dwight. He's really good at it in Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass, great movie.
Yeah. And before the superhero craze, wasn't it?
Kind of in the middle. It's like 2011.